Day 12. So we are in 2 Samuel 5 through 8, 11 through 13, 15 and 18.
Yeah, and again, so 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, two favorites for history.
Yes,
and what is
so much good
what
stuff.
Is this like in the heyday of Israel? And then when we get to Kings, we'll talk about how that shifts a little bit. But so we pick up in chapter 5 when David is now officially becoming king of all of Israel. There's a little bit of time lag between, I think, 7 years between where Saul dies and David's king of part of the nation, mm-hmm. and 7 years then where David becomes king over the entire nation. And then he rules over the entire nation for 33 additional years. But we read about how God blesses David, right? When he becomes king, he starts conquering the land the way that they were intended to do, right? This was the land that God had given them, but they didn't drive out the nations in the book of Joshua like they were supposed to. And we see in Judges that people kind of retook the land from them. Now with David as king, he is conquering the land the way it was supposed to be theirs. And he conquers the city of Jerusalem, and he says, this will be the capital of Israel. Both, and I love the way he does this. I think it's important for us to realize he's making Jerusalem the capital both, because there's no separation in his mind, both religiously and politically. Like, he's married the way it's supposed to be, politics and religion in the nation of Israel. They're not separate. Right? Because he knows that people follow him as he follows God. And so he does that. But part of that is like, okay, we're going to set up the tabernacle permanently in Jerusalem. So, hey, let's get it here and let's move the ark here. And that gives us one of these strange stories that we read. and we're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
So you read the story, right? That they're moving the Ark of the Covenant, mm-hmm. and some guy who we never know how to pronounce his name.
Uzzah.
We'll call him Uzzah. Uzzah is just there, right? Doing a good job, doing what he's told to do. Mm-hmm. And the Ark is on a cart, and it goes over like a bump in the road, some rocks, and it gets unsteady. And Uzzah is afraid the Ark is, I mean, this is the Ark of the Covenant, right? This is a big deal. And it's about to fall off the cart, and he's like, whoa, that's no good. And he reaches out his hand to steady the Ark, and he touches it, and he drops dead. Right? And so we're like, man, what is God? He was so mad at what did Uzzah do wrong? And here's the thing. It wasn't necessarily Uzzah's fault,
David should have known better, though, too.
Well, David should have known better. Yeah. The Levite should have known better. The problem is Uzzah did something he was not supposed to do. But it all stemmed from the fact that as a people, they were moving this thing in completely a disobedient way.
Yep. And God's holiness is non-negotiable.
It's non-negotiable, whether our intentions, see, this is a lesson there. Your intentions might be fine, but that doesn't mean it's okay just to do whatever you feel like.
I had heard some commentary on this because people often read the story and think, man, God is just so terrible and he is so wrathful.
Yeah, no way.
But
God isn't to be
trifled with.
They were saying
that just because God struck Uzzah dead in this instant doesn't mean that was he necessarily eternally damned. He might have been someone that followed the Lord his whole life.
Well,
and so it doesn't necessarily
this moment,
mean that.
Yeah, this moment does not determine his eternal destination.
Right.
His decisions about God determine his eternal destination.
Right.
He made a mistake here, and it was a very costly mistake. But it's on David. Go back to Leviticus and Exodus. Where God gives the provisions for this is how,
in fact, how you carry
remember
the ark.
He listed so many. He's like, this clan of Levites will carry the poles, and this clan will go back to all of those long lists.
Very
and
specific.
People listening might have been wondering, why are they talking about that? Why? Well, because it mattered to God, and here now they just do it haphazardly and they pay. After a little hiccup and some time, David is determined. This time they do it right. They bring and full of worship, and they bring the ark in to the city with celebration and dancing, and everybody is thrilled except for David's wife.
Yeah, because David's getting his
He's getting his groove on, yeah. And everybody's thrilled except for David's wife and God. She curses David, curses God, and God actually causes her to be barren. And you might think, wow, that's a rough penalty. But again, God mm-hmm. does not compromise his glory. Mm-hmm. And so that's just the way that it is. But David continues to conquer the land, and God reiterates the covenant. The same offer he made to Saul, he makes to David. Hey, if you'll follow me, I will make you a permanent line. Mm-hmm. You'll always have a descendant on the throne. Yeah. And we know the Messiah comes from the line of David. Yeah. And so he makes David that offer, and David responds humbly and in prayer. And he just acknowledges God's greatness, and David sets his heart. He'll make mistakes, we'll read, but he sets his heart on following God. Okay. And then we just read
then we
more.
Get to some of his mistakes.
Yeah, we get to chapter 11, and the thing is we read chapter 11 and we get real mad at David.
Yeah.
And we should be irritated at David. And we might be tempted to just say, you know what, we need to throw David away here because of this mistake. But what we have to remember is God doesn't do that. He doesn't do it to us right. when we mess up, and he's not doing it to David. He clearly doesn't do it to David.
Nope.
He calls David, even after this, a man after my own heart. Mm-hmm. And so we need to acknowledge this as a failure, but we need to appreciate David's response to it.
He always repents.
He does. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, we know that David and Bathsheba, basically this is, as we read the story of David and Bathsheba, let's not read this as two consensual people committing
right.
adultery.
Right.
Basically, let's read this as pretty close to rape,
mm-hmm.
Right? David is first of all, he's doing what he shouldn't be doing. He
yeah,
should be out with
yeah,
his armies at war.
He's, at, yeah.
He's up on the roof at the time when people go mm-hmm. up there to bathe. He knows mm-hmm. what he's doing.
Yeah.
He notices Bathsheba, and noticing isn't a sin, but he looks twice. Right? He makes arrangements. He inquires about her, makes arrangements for him to. What is she supposed to do? Say no to the king?
Right.
That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. He knows she's married, but he insists anyway, and he sleeps
he
with her
it.
And
he wants it.
And yeah. And he has an affair with her, and mm-hmm. she becomes pregnant. And that thing that he thought he wanted very quickly leads to death.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like James 1 talks about that, right? Yeah. Like that still, that sin, it's so desirable and it leads to death. And it does with this. First, figuratively, like, okay, I got to figure out how to cover up this mistake. He calls the husband home and hopes that he'll sleep with her and then it'll be okay. But he refuses because he's noble.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm not doing this
yeah,
when my friends are off at war.
He's behaving more like yeah. an Israelite.
And, than yeah. He and he's a Hittite, right? Like they're yeah. just as part of the army. And, yeah. And all of this happens. And basically, David conceives of his murder, and then once he's murdered, invites or takes Bathsheba in
yep.
To be his wife, and they have this child. But God isn't having this, and so God sends the prophet Nathan, and this is, I love the way this works. God sends mm-hmm. the prophet Nathan to rebuke David, but he doesn't do it by saying, David, I know you sinned, stop it. He tells David a story. And David about another person that cheats and murders and steals. And David's like, well, find that guy and kill him. You know, find that guy and kill that guy because he's awful. And David and Nathan says, well, actually, dude, that's you. And so then David is face to face with his own sin and the punishment he deserves. And he repents. But God, again, not harsh, but certainly not to be trifled with. His holiness matters. God decrees that that child will die. And there's an interesting thing in there where David acknowledges that he will see that child again, presumably in the afterlife, right? Because that child is dead, and he says, I know that I'll see him again. And so this is one of the places where we get this doctrine of the age of accountability, where somebody dies before they're old enough. That's kind of one of the places where that comes from. But
mm-hmm.
David says, okay, I'm forgiving you, or I'm sorry, God says, okay, I'm forgiving you, but because of this, you're going to struggle with consequences the rest of your reign. And then we see one of them come to fruition with his stepchildren, mm-hmm. right? Or I'm sorry, not stepchildren, his children, and they're half siblings to each other. And there's a son named Amnon and a daughter named Tamar. Amnon gets weird and mm-hmm. decides, hey, he does the same thing that yeah. David does to Bathsheba. Mm-hmm. He sees her, he wants her, he rapes her. Mm-hmm. And then
no one does anything.
And then instead of then trying to marry her, which would have been detestable to God,
right?
But it probably would have, David would have allowed it. Mm-hmm. He then wants nothing to do with her because mm-hmm. she reminds him of his guilt. Mm-hmm. And David knows about it, but he doesn't do anything about it.
But and because his brother does.
Because he doesn't do anything about it, then Tamar's brother Absalom, he does something about it.
I picture Absalom, and David and I were talking about this last week, looking like Fabio.
Could be with the long hair.
Well, because like how much it weighs. And yeah. Like his vanity.
Yeah. but Absalom is David won't deal with it. He says, "Fine, I will." So he plots against his brother, and he kills his brother, and then David forgives him. Right, he's mad at him, but he forgives him. But Absalom carries bitterness in his heart, and he works then to usurp David to take over the throne. Mm-hmm. And there are, as we keep reading the story, there's a season where David is on the run. Eventually, God restores David, and in battle, Absalom dies. And it's your favorite part, how
it's
he
one
dies.
Of my favorite
Go ahead and tell us.
He's writing. I don't even remember what he's writing on, and his hair. Gets stuck in a tree, and his whatever he's riding on keeps on going, and so he's hanging there by his hair, and then Joab comes and kills him.
Yeah.
And just I don't know, like, really, dude,
it's wonky,
like long hair problems, right?
Yeah, cut your hair. Yeah, and actually, so and Joab isn't supposed to kill him. David says, "Hey, spare him," but Joab says, "No, this is right for him to die," and kills him. And that's the end of the rebellion. But David suffered because of his sin, and everything that came afterwards as a consequence of that.